Will the Senate please come to order? Will the members please vote to signify their presence? No. Will the secretary please void the roll? Would the members please vote to signify their presence?
The roll shows 10 members present, Mr. President.
Please stand for the invocation by Senator Lehman.
I've chosen for our prayer today to read Psalm 8. Psalm 8 is a psalm of David, so I guess in some ways this could be considered ecumenical. David was a Jew. The Bible also records that despite his many mistakes, that he is recorded as a man after God's heart. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens. From the lips of children and infants you have ordained praise because of your enemies to silence the foe and the avenger. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him? You made him a little lower than the heavenly beings and crowned him with glory and honor. You made him ruler over the works of your hands. You put everything under his feet, all flocks and herds and the beasts of the field, the birds of the air and the fish of the sea, all that swim the paths of the seas. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. Amen.
Senator Duncan, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent the prayer be spread upon the journal.
Without objection, so ordered. Will the secretary please certify the journal?
I wish to certify the preface of the journal for the 119th legislative day.
I move that the journal be certified as approved and corrected, approved and be as corrected by the Senate Secretary. You had that down there.
Without objection, the journal is approved as certified and corrected by the Senate Secretary. That brings us to introduction of guests. Are the guests for introduction? Senator Duncan?
I guess for introduction, but I was wondering if, I don't think we need to move on the calendar for this, but I'd like to, there's been a terrible mistake made, and I'd like to try to correct it if I could. When people were talking about citations the other day, I misunderstood. I thought that we were having a citation recommending the caning of Senator Taylor, and my name inadvertently got on it. So I'd like to move that my name be removed from the citation concerning the government of Singapore. I misunderstood what that was all about.
Without objection, Senator Duncan's previous sponsorship of the citation on responsible government will be removed.
I wish I had the information of that level of levity, because that's good, but I do have some sad news I would like to give to the body. Before we get started, and that is that E.L. Bob Ellis, a pioneer Alaska aviator of my district, a dear old friend and political leader, passed away last night in Ketchikan.
Thank you for the information. That brings us to messages from the governor.
There are no messages from the governor, Mr. President.
Messages from the House.
Message date, May 8th, dear Mr. President. The House has passed CS for Senate Bill 101 Finance, title amended with the following amendment. House CS for CS for Senate Bill 101 Finance, relating to interim assistance in the Adult Public Assistance Program requiring the Department of Health and Social Services to consult with the Department of Education in order to develop an application process and disability determination system to implement an adult public assistance program and returning for consideration.
Senator Taylor.
Oh, yeah. I move and ask that the Senate concur in the House amendments to committee substitute Senate Bill 101, Finance, title amended, thus adopting House committee substitute, committee substitute, Senate Bill 101, Finance.
There is objection. Senator Duncan?
I was just wondering if someone could explain exactly what the differences are on legislation.
Senator Taylor? Senator Frank?
I should know the answer to that question. I believe the House made a slight reduction or a slight change that made it a little bit more applicable. Apparently they redid Section 5. Yes, I think it was for to also include those that were pending applicants.
That is correct if you look at Section 5. Senator Ellis?
Mr. President, I didn't hear the last words of the co-chair of Finance.
Senator Frank?
Applicants.
Senator Ellis, please. Senate will stand. The Senate, please come back to order. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to urge members of the Senate to vote not to concur in this House change. From the explanation from the Senate co-chair of Finance, it appears to me that the House is casting a wider net and cutting off interim assistance to more disabled Alaskans. Well, some of them are disabled. Some of them may not be. But what this change would do is deny interim assistance not just to those folks that we did in the Senate legislation, but also to Alaskans who are in the appeal process for interim assistance. Does that seem fair or right to anybody to change the law here, to cut people off? Who have interim assistance who are appealing there, they must feel pretty strongly to go through the appeal process of their denial of disability benefits from the federal government. I've talked about the social safety net before. There's a little bit more here, and we're ripping the last shred of it. But people in the appeal process, that seems unreasonable to me to expand the bill to cover those folks. As the co-chair of Finance pointed out here in our discussion, he knows that I've opposed the original legislation. I did that pretty vociferously, but this really goes over the edge of what the House has done. If the co-chair of Finance and I are both confused about what this does, I hope somebody will bring it to our attention, but I think we agree that they're denying interim assistance to people who are appealing their case, and that just seems like going a bit too far.
Senator Frank?
Yeah. Just to refresh people's memory, the bill, the main purpose of the bill as it came out of the Senate was to go back to the old program that we had when we first started this program of interim assistance in 1982. At that time, as you recall, interim assistance was paid to people up until the time of their initial determination. And if they were determined ineligible at the initial determination, they no longer received benefits. They still could go on through the appeals process if they wanted to. Sometimes, I don't know, months or I don't know if it goes beyond months into years or not. But anyway, they would no longer have the interim assistance when they were under appeal. We sent it over that way. The House added language that would be consistent for those people that are currently under appeal. In other words, if they have received an initial determination and they have been declared ineligible and they're and they are appealing that decision. They are now, until this law becomes effective, they would be receiving benefits. This version, as the senator from downtown Anchorage indicates, would remove those benefits when the bill became effective. So that's the effect of it. It makes it applicable in a fashion to those currently getting benefits as a new person would.
Senator Ellis.
Well, just in closing, Mr. President, I would argue against changing the rules and having retroactivity toward these people who were involved in the appeal process. It just seems like an unfair and unnecessary thing to do. I'm sure we're talking about a relatively piddly amount of money for people that I believe are probably disabled. Some of them, a few of them may not be, but are in the process of appealing this determination. And to go back and it just seems a little bit mean-spirited, a little over the edge. You know, the original bill overturned the court decision. I disagreed with that, but to go further and go back to the people that are in the appeal process now and to take disability benefits away from them, that's just over the edge in terms of dealing with Alaskans in need. We're not talking about, you know, folks cleaning up bulk fuel or all the other programs that we spend money on in the state. We're talking about individuals who are disabled to some degree. Whether they meet the federal standards or not is what is to be determined by Voc Rehab and by the federal SSI folks. And to deny people in the appeal process currently, you know, we'll be denying folks in the future in this case. But to go back and take the Alaskans that are now under appeal and end their assistance in the middle of that, what must be a difficult process to go through emotionally and financially, is just too much. We ought to not concur.
Question before the Senate is the adoption of the House Committee Substitute. Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 101, Finance. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so House Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 101, Finance, has passed the Senate on concurrence.
Message dated May 8th. Dear Mr. President, the House has passed CS for Senate Bill 132, Resources, amended with the following amendment. House CS for CS for Senate Bill 132, Resources, Loans for the Purchase of Individual Fishery Quota Shares, and providing for effective date with the House Resources Letter of Intent.
Senator Taylor.
I move that the Senate concur in the House amendment to Committee Substitute Senate Bill 132, Resource, thus affecting House Committee Substitute Senate Bill 132, Resource.
Senator Duncan.
I just wanted to sponsor the plan.
Senator Jacko.
Thank you, Mr. President. The basic difference, as I understand this legislation from what we passed over, is the legislation as it left the Senate allowed for the CDQs to match money with the state to purchase IFQs. The House took the CDQ match portion of the legislation out, so now it just allows that state loan program be used to purchase IFQs.
Question before the Senate is, shall the Senate concur in the House amendment, thus adopting House Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 132, Resources? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so House Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 132, Resources, has passed the Senate on concurrence by a vote of 20 yeas to 0 nays. Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on concurrence be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the roll call on concurrence and final passage will be considered the roll call on the effective date clause. Madam Secretary.
Message dated May 8th. Dear Mr. President, the House has passed CS for Senate Bill 215, Finance, amended, EFDFA, with the following amendment. House CS for Senate Bill 215, Finance, amended, relating to oil and hazardous substance, and returning for consideration.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you. Move and ask unanimous consent. I move that the Senate concur in the House amendments to Committee Substitute Senate Bill 215, Finance, amended, effective date failed. thus adopting House Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 215, Finance, amended House.
Senator Ellis?
Could we get an explanation, please?
Senator Miller?
Thank you, Mr. President. There was some changes that were made in House Resources, House Finance, and last night on the House floor. The major change, in my opinion, was as the bill that left the Senate, there was the $37 million in the response that is now there would be all put in the response fund. Last night there was an amendment that was offered and passed, which would take $5 million of that from the response fund and put it in the prevention side. So there would only be 32. So that would make it so the industry would have to continue the nickels up for that additional $5 million. The five was taken and put in the response side. Some language that was put in House Resources, in the Senate version, was that interest off the account, such as the $50 million account, may be credited to the response or to the prevention side. House Finance adopted the amendment which said that they will be credited to the response side. However, the legislature still has the appropriation powers. The money just goes into this pot, and then the legislature would appropriate the money out of there. In House Finance, they added an amendment that would add bulk storage facilities to the allowable uses of the prevention account. And most of the other changes on that side were technical, just for conforming to some of the other amendments. But those were the major amendments.
Senator Curtula?
It improved a bad bill, slightly improved.
Question before the Senate is concurrence with House amendments, thus adopting House Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 215, Finance, amended House. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Senator Ellis?
President, I'll change from yea to nay.
Does any other member wish to change their vote? Senator Donnelly?
I'm going to change from no to yes.
Senator Donnelly from nay to yea. Does any other member wish to change their vote? Will the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so the Senate has concurred in the House amendment to Committee Substitute Senate Bill 215, thus adopting House Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute Senate Bill 215, Finance, amended House. Senate will stand at ease, please. Will the Senate please come back to order, Madam Secretary?
Message dated May 5th, 19. Mr. President, the House has passed CS for Senate Bill 247, Second Finance, State Lease and Lease Purchase Financing, with the following amendment. House CS for Senate Bill 247, Finance, MH, and returning for consideration. House Concurrent Resolution Number 36, Title Change, has been passed for both houses.
Senator Taylor?
I move that the Senate concur in the House amendments to Committee Substitute Senate Bill 247, Second Finance, thus adopting House Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute Senate Bill 247, Finance, amended House.
Senator Pierce? Senator Pierce, are you calling the Senate on the calendar?
No.
Or on the daily order of business, or just on this vote?
We're not to the calendar yet.
Pardon?
We're not to the calendar yet.
Okay, at the end of this call, I intend to call the Senate on the order of business, top to bottom. Stay here. Sure you can. Will the Senate please come back to order? While the call is being satisfied, could we have the explanation of the differences in House CS for Senate Bill 247? Senator Phillips.
Mr. President, these are the changes that the House made to Senate Bill 247. If you look on page 1, line 3, the words in the middle of that line is "with certain exceptions" was added. Turn to page 2, lines 17 through 29, and page 3, lines 1 through 4, all new language. It deals with the University of Alaska. And section 12 on page 9 is new language for the Alaska court system.
Senator Lincoln?
Well, Mr. President, could somebody explain what those parts are doing here? Senator Phillips.
Okay. Mr. President, the House changed the title by adding the words "and with certain exceptions" on page 1, line 3. House also added the language starting page 2, line 17 through page 3. Language specifically allows the university to enter into lease agreements with renewal periods and exceed the original period of lease when the lease is paid solely from federal grants. House also added section 12 starting page 9, line 9 through page 9, line 26. Section 12 authorizes the court system to continue its efforts to acquire the Anchorage Times property in Anchorage and gives the court system until December 31st, 1994 to complete the purchase. All other provisions of the bill are given immediate effective dates. Essentially what the differences are.
Is there further debate? If there's no further debate, the question before the Senate is the adoption of the House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute Senate Bill 247, Finance Amended House. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so the Senate has concurred the House Amendment to Committee Substitute Senate Bill 247, thus adopting House Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute Senate Bill 247, Finance Amended House by a vote of 16 yeas to 4 nays. Senator Taylor.
Will the vote on concurrence be considered the vote on the effective date clause?
Without objection, the roll call on concurrence will be the roll call on the effective date clause.
Those are all the messages from the House today, Mr. President.
Communications.
Letter dated May 9th, dear Mr. President, pursuant to Alaska Statute AS 244215, I am submitting the monetary terms of the collective bargaining agreement between the State of Alaska and the Public Safety Employees Association. This agreement replaces the interest arbitrator's award previously reported. The enclosed letter of agreement between the state and the PSEA includes all modified terms. Funding for these terms will be formally requested by the Office of Management and Budget. Sincerely, Nancy Berusera, Commissioner.
I'll refer that letter to finance, but actually the terms will probably go into a bill that's already in rule.
Those are all the communications.
Reports to standing committees.
Judiciary Committee considered the following appointment with the position of Attorney General Bruce Portello. There were no stated objections regarding confirmation of the named individual. However, this does not necessarily indicate an intention of a committee member to vote for or against the individual named at the time of the joint session on confirmation. Signed, Senator Taylor, Chairman, Senator Solomon Little. Dear Mr. President, in accordance with AS 390580, the Senate Resources Committee received the following with regard to confirmation of the governor's appointments. Board of Game, Thomas Johnson. There were no stated objections to the confirmation of the named individual by committee members. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions. Respectfully, Senator Mueller, Chairman, Senators Frank, Adam, Jara, Senators Lehman, Pearson, Donnelly. Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill 201, Finance Amended, Mental Health Trust Land. Majority of the committee recommends the Senate CS and do pass. Report was signed by Senator Frank, co-chair, concurring Senators Jacko, Kelly, and Rieger. Senator Pierce, co-chair, and Senator Sharp sign no recommendation. CS for House Bill 201, Finance Amended, has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill 212, Judiciary, Sentencing aggravating Factors, recommends the Judiciary Senate CS be adopted. Majority of the committee reports it back with no recommendation. Report was signed by Senator Frank, co-chair, concurring Senators Rieger, Cotullo, and Sharp. Senator Pierce, co-chair, and Senators Jacko and Kelly sign do pass. CS for House Bill number 212 has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill 371, Finance Amended, Appropriations to Capitalize the Mental Health Trust Fund. Majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with the Senate CS and do pass. Report was signed by Senator Pierce, chair, concurring Senators Rieger, Kelly, Jacko, and Sharp. Senator Frank, co-chair, and Senator Cotullo sign no recommendation. CSHB number 371, Finance Amended, has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill number 447, Finance, established in the Fognac Island State Park, recommends it be replaced with the Senate CS and reports it back as follows. Senator Frank, co-chair, and Senators Jacko and Kelly signed no recommendation. Senator Sharp signed do not pass. Senator Pierce, co-chair, and Senator Rieger signed do pass. Attaches a Finance Committee letter of intent. CS for House Bill number 447, Finance, has no further referral. Rules Committee considered CSSS HB 249 State Affairs amended, reestablishing the Board of Electrical Examiners, recommends it be replaced with Senate CS, due pass and calendar. Report was signed by Senator Halford, concurring Senator Jackal, Senator Jarroff signed no recommendation, Senator Rieger signed no recommendation, calendar. Rules Committee considered CS for House Bill 218 Fish, maximum length of salmon seine vessels, House Bill 221 Workers' Comp for volunteer ambulance attendants, CSHB 266 Labor and Commerce, extending the termination date of the Big Game Commercial Services Board, House Bill 372 Four Dam Pool Transfer Fund, House Bill 409 Eligibility for Public Assistance, House Bill 410 Real Estate Appraisers, House Bill 462 Mining Requirements, House Concurrent Resolution 26 declaring 1994 to be the year of Vancouver, House Concurrent Resolution number 31 Alcohol-Related Birth Defects Awareness Week, House Concurrent Resolution number 4 declaring June 5 through 11 as the last garden week. These bills and resolution appear on today's calendar, and those are all the standing committee reports today, Mr. President.
Reports to special committees.
Special committee report, Mr. President, Mr. Speaker. Conference committee with limited powers of free conference considering CS for House Bill 370 Finance, Budget Reserve Fund failed, appropriations for the operating loan program, expenses of state government to capitalize funds, and Senate CS for House Bill 370 Finance AMS, making appropriations to the operating loan program, expenses of state government to capitalize funds, making appropriations under Article 9, Section 17, Constitution of the State of Alaska, from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund, recommends that Conference CS for House Bill number 370 be adopted. Report was signed by Representative Larson, Chair, Representatives Hammond and Grusendorf, Senator Frank, Chair, Senators Pearson and Senator Cardullo signed no recommendation. Those are all the special committee reports today.
Introduction to Senate resolutions.
Senate Concurrent Resolution number 25. By the Senate Rules Committee, suspending Uniform Rules 24C-3541B-E of the Alaska State Legislature concerning House Bill 249 relating to electrical and mechanical administrators.
That will be referred to today's calendar right in front of the consideration of House Bill 249, which it applies to.
Those are all the resolutions for introduction.
Introduction of Senate bills.
Hold that. There are no Senate bills today.
That brings us to the consideration of the LA calendar.
CS for House Bill 218 Fish by the House Special Committee on Fisheries, an act relating to the maximum length of salmon seine vessels and providing for an effective date. Resources Committee considered the bill and reports it back with no recommendation. Report was sent by Senator Miller, concurring Senators Frank, Parrish, Donnelly, Jarroff, and Lehman. Excuse me, Senator Miller signed due pass. Rules Committee recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Halford, concurring Senators Rieger and Jackal. Senator Lowell signed no recommendation. Senator Jarroff signed no, not yet. I have no amendments.
Senator Taylor.
House Bill 218, Fish.
Object. Senator President, Jarroff. I have an amendment that's being offered at this time. And the...
We stand at ease while the amendment's being copied. Senate, please come back to order. That's no changes. That's still our bill. Senator Jarroff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the amendment.
Amendment number one has been moved. There is objection. Senator Jarroff.
Thank you, Mr. President. And addressing the amendment, what it does is it, in section four of the bill, it changes the effective date of section two of the bill to 1998. This bill, Mr. President, was introduced in 1993, and in the backup material offered by the department, we find there that the sponsor says that it would give the board a three-year period to address the issue as they take up each region's salmon fisheries. And in the department, which has remained neutral on this this legislation, they mention there that they would prefer to have an amendment adopted to the original bill, in which I would guess this is why that there is a committee substitute for the bill. And their amendment would have been to have a three-year time for a period for the Board of Fish to adopt regulations regarding any changes to the gear or vessel limitation. And the reason that they suggest this is that the board works on a three-year cycle, and it would allow them to go through a complete cycle of all of their fisheries hearings in order to come up with a series of proposed or regulations for them to operate under. And I don't think that we caught this in the Resources Committee or as it went through the process, and I think it's basically should be considered more of a technical amendment than anything of any substance, and it just allows the board to go through the process of allowing each region, whether it's Southeast, Central, Western, to go through the process and to hear the testimony from the fishermen in the area before they come up with a series of regulations that would set the parameters in order for them to take in proposals and to hear the testimony and make their decisions in regards to the proposals that will definitely come to them upon the passage and implementation of this piece of legislation.
Senator Jacko.
Thank you, Mr. President. The sponsor of the legislation did introduce legislation last year with a three-year time frame for implementation by the board. It was the sponsor that set the three-year time period, and the sponsor feels that in so much as that this is 94, that 2 years is sufficient time for the board and doesn't feel that it's necessary to extend the effective date on up to another year.
Question before the Senate is the adoption of Amendment Number 1. If there's no further debate, members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so amendment number 1 to committee substitute House Bill 218 Fish is adopted by a vote of 11 yeas, 9 nays. Madam Secretary.
I have no further amendments.
Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent to the substitute House Bill 218 Fish, amended Senate, to be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, committee substitute House Bill 218 Fish, amended Senate. That objection is far too late. Senate will stand at ease. Back to order. Committee substitute House Bill 218 Fish effective date amended Senate has been advanced. It is before us in third reading. Madam Secretary.
CS for House Bill 218 Fish effective date MS, an act related to the maximum length of salmon sand vessels and providing for an effective date.
Senator Lincoln.
Mr. President, I had some questions on the bill, and perhaps someone would answer it for me. I was concerned with the length of the vessel being 58 feet, may not be longer than 58 feet, except vessels that have fished in the waters before. I don't know how many those are prior to 1962. I have no idea how many those are. But I was concerned that with the larger vessels that we're now watching out for the fishermen's investment instead of the resource investment for Alaska, that I don't know with the 58-foot vessels how many those would be, how much fish would be taken by those vessels, that it seems to me that if we have a number of vessels out there that are 58 feet and longer, that the owners would have to be more concerned about their particular investment in the their vessel and not on resource allocation, but just a sweeping of our seas of the fisheries. And we sure have seen last year what these larger boats have done in the Area M seine fishery on the chum fish in the AYK area. And I'm just concerned that we're adopting a bill here that we don't know what the impact is going to be. I don't have anything on here as what the Department of Fish and Game's recommendation is. There's zero fiscal notes, but I don't see any recommendation or from the Board of Fishery. And I'd like some response to the concerns that I've expressed.
Mr. President,
Senator Jekyll,
the concern with regards to the resources, not a larger vessel doesn't necessarily mean that you have a greater capacity to harvest. Limitations on a resource are primary limits that are in place with gear limitations or time limitations, area limitations. The vessel limitation is a limitation that was placed on the fishery. It's an artificial limitation, and it's had the effect of preventing those folks who have 58-foot boats from participating in other fisheries. If we remove the limit, if we had removed the limit earlier on, some of those folks would have been able to get involved in some of the bottom fisheries as they had developed. The limitation prevented them from doing that. For example, some of the boats in Sand Point, the 58-foot boats in Sand Point or King Cove, had they not been 58-foot limits, would have been more likely to have been able to gone out to the Barents Sea and participate in the crabfish industry, would have been able to go out off the coast and participate in the bottom fish industry for dragon, for cod, and those sorts of things. So this would allow it would allow the fishermen to be more diverse and to branch out into other areas and hopefully utilize a greater return.
Senator Jarrah?
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess I'm trying to react favorably and unfavorably to those comments, and I think it depends on what side of the issue you're on. And if you're after conservation, I don't think this is a piece of legislation there that you want to see go by. And I think the reason there that the department wanted to have the 3-year period in order to go through and to have a review from each of the regions before implementing the regulations and in implementing the possibly doing away with the vessel size in certain areas is to really look at this issue. And one of the major concerns that we hear now with the deliberations of the Board of Fish, and we know there that those deliberations exceed 100 days plus per year, that they spend a lot of time discussing the proposals that come before them. Now, we're going to be putting before them another mechanism that is going to create additional proposals to be generated, additional hearing time, and it's going to take them that much longer to make some of these decisions there that they'll need to make. And I guess the concern that I have is that if the 58-foot limit is indeed lifted in certain areas or extended to 75, 80, 100 feet, whatever it might be, that it's not long after that the department or the board also controls the length of the seines that are used. Right now it depends on where you are. I think they're like 250 fathoms, and I could see 300, 350, 500 fathoms. And then also they determine the depth or the strip of each seine, and it depends on where you are. Some of them are restricted to, and I think some fisheries, one strip, two strips, three. And I can see that these strips can extend in terms of depth. And when you're doing that, you've got the larger vessel that's out there in more inclement weather. You've got longer gear. You've got deeper gear. You've got the potential of catching more salmon in this case here. And it's going to cause a real problem in terms of I guess if you want to use the term intercept fisheries, I don't like to use that because it's a real buzzword there. I think that causes some real problems with people. But it, the fear that I have there is that we've got a number of vessels now that have been excluded out of different fisheries, not only in Alaska, but as we go down to Washington, Oregon, and California, the commercial fisherman is virtually out of business in those areas. And it doesn't take long with the composition, the right composition of the Board of Fish, to make a determination, for example, in Southeast, that we don't need a 58-foot limit down here, that due to the pressure from permit holders, and we know the numbers of permit holders that are not residents of the state of Alaska, that have access to many of these vessels, and the political pressure that falls upon the Board of Fish, people sitting there that represent another area in the state may not have as much concern in Southeast, or if you have somebody that's on the sport fishing industry, they may not have the same concern there and conservation there in one area of the state as they may have in theirs. We've gone through some of these arguments. And if some of these limitations are lifted, and once you let some of these vessels in there, it's going to be very difficult to get them back out again. And I think what we're going to end up doing, particularly in the areas where we have a lot of Cape fisheries, that the pressure to increase the size of the vessel, the pressure to increase the length of the seines, the depth of the seines, is going to be tremendous on the Board of Fish. And we may not see the results this year or 3 years from now. We may not see it 5 years from now. But as you go on down and this becomes into effect, and more people begin to realize what the potential is out there, I think you've lost the argument there in good conservation, particularly on some traveling stocks. And even as they move within an area, I can think on Kodiak Island, for example, we have a number of anadromous streams that provide a number, quite a few salmon, and a lot of them might be localized salmon to those areas like Karluk, that those salmon could be picked up there on the south end of Kodiak or on the west end of Kodiak before they reach their destination there at the times there when the salmon are traveling. And as a comment was made by one member of this body here, I think in a newspaper the other day, that fishing is at its best when it's the roughest out there. Well, the larger vessel that you have, the rough weather doesn't make a difference. And that's when the fish are traveling. And so as a fisherman that's concerned about the conservation of the resource, I like to keep the gears limitation down, like to keep the vessels down, and work from that particular angle. As a fisherman entrepreneur that once would like to get into diversification, it makes all the sense in the world to be able to have a much larger, more diversified fishing vessel. And let me tell you, a lot of these vessels there that are in that, well, the 58-foot limit on up there, the electronics on that there would amaze any science major or engineer as to what is available. I mean, if there is a fish out there swimming around, they'll find it. And it's, I strongly object to this, and I would hope there that it won't pass. And I know that sometime today we're going to be meeting on the confirmation of the Board of Fish members, and one of the major issues that has come up is their position on the conservation of the resource.
Senator Jacko?
Mr. President, it's pretty difficult, unless you know absolutely nothing about commercial fishing, it's pretty difficult to make a conservation argument based on this legislation. Again, there are limitations on in terms of conservation. The limitations come in terms of gear limitations. There are limitations in place on how long your seine can be. There are limitations in terms of time. There are limitations in terms of area. The size of the boat doesn't really have a whole lot to do with the ability to harvest more capacity. If you're only allowed to get a certain percentage of the fish overall in a particular fishery, the size of the boat isn't going to have anything to do with it. As far as for being able to function in larger seas with a larger boat, if you have a short seine or a limit on the size of the seine, having a larger boat isn't going to make you more effective. You're not going to be able to operate if you have an 80-foot boat and a 200-fathom seine, it isn't going to work. You're not going to be able to operate a small seine if you have a lot of weather. It's an imaginative argument, but it's not one that that really works in terms of conservation. There is a concern out there with regards to the people who do have 58-foot boats. That the concern, of course, is that whether or not they'd have a market for those boats, what would happen to those boats. And that's a difficult question to answer. It is a major concern. There's been a lot of discussions with regards to the 32-foot limits that we have in Bristol Bay. And the argument is, of course, that if we didn't have a 32-foot limit, we may be able to have a higher quality product because we'd be able to put refrigeration on those boats and whatnot. In terms of the electronics, it really doesn't matter with regards to the size of the boat. You can put just as much electronics on a 58-foot boat as you could put on a 120-fathom-foot boat or 120-foot boat, so it's not going to make a whole lot of difference in that regard. Basically, what the legislation does is it does away with 58-foot limit, if so deemed by the Board of Fish. It would allow those folks, it would basically take away a government regulation that really should not have been there in the first place.
Senator Lincoln?
Mr. President, I perhaps did not ask the question prior. I thought I did, but how many of these vessels would be Alaskan vessels opposed to those that are owned by out-of-state or operated by out-of-state residents?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to the question, but I'm glad that it was asked because it brings up another point. Really, the issue here that we're trying to address is in-state versus out-of-state. When we Alaskanized the fishery, when we Americanized the fishery, we forgot to Alaskanize the fishery. And because of the fact that there were so many people in Alaska that had these 58-foot limit boats, they were precluded from getting into these other fisheries. And so a lot of those fisheries taken over, I guess, if you will, are bought into by people from outside the state of Alaska who have larger boats. If we didn't have this 58-foot limit, there would be a lot more people involved in the fishery from the coastal communities around the state of Alaska. So it's really, to a large extent, an Alaskanization of the fishery versus, say, Seattle or out-of-state issue. And I'm sorry, I don't know specifically how many are Alaskan versus out-of-state, but I do know that if we didn't have this 58-foot limit, there would be a lot more Alaskans participating in the bottom fishery that right now that there are.
Question before the Senate is final passage of committee substitute House Bill 218, Fish. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Senator Kelly? Senator Kelly from NADA. Does any other member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so, committee substitute House Bill 218, Fish, has failed to be adopted by the Senate by a vote of 9 yeas to 11 nays. Madam Secretary.
House Bill number 221 by Representatives Hudson and Grusendorf, an act relating to workers' compensation for volunteer ambulance attendants, police officers, and firefighters, and providing for an effective date. CNRA committee considered the bill, recommends due pass. Report was signed by Senator Phillips, Chair, concurring. Senator Taylor, Jarf, and Lehman. Labor and Commerce recommends the Senate CS. Reports are back as follows. Senator Kelly, Chair, and Senator Sharp signed due pass. Senators Rieger and Salo, no recommendation. Rules recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Halperin, concurring. Senators Bridger and Jara. Senator Little signed no recommendation. There's Labor and Commerce, Senate CS.
Senator Kelly.
Mr. President, before I move the Labor and Commerce CS, I'll briefly explain it. What we did is take out a couple of provisions that were opposed by some municipalities throughout the state. The CS strictly implements the Workers' Compensation Board's recommendation. I know of no opposition to the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute, so I would therefore move that it be adopted.
Yes. Without objection, the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for House Bill 221 is adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Senate CS for House Bill 221, Labor and Commerce, and I have no amendments.
Senator Curtula.
President, I move to be shown as cross-sponsor. 220.
Senator Taylor.
some other cross-sponsors.
Senator Donnelly, Senator Little, Senator Jaroff, Senator Duncan, Senator Lincoln, Senator Phillips, Senator Kelly, Senator Pierce, Senator Sharp, Senator Rieger, Senator Taylor.
Sure.
If nobody else, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 221, Labor and Commerce, cross-sponsored by almost everybody in the Senate, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, Senate Committee substitute House Bill 221, Labor and Commerce, is considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Senate CS House Bill 221, Labor and Commerce, an act relating to workers' compensation for volunteer ambulance attendants, police officers, and firefighters, and providing for an effective date.
Question before the Senate is final passage of Senate Committee substitute House Bill 221, Labor and Commerce. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 221, Labor and Commerce, it's passed the Senate by a vote of 20 yeas, 0 nays. Senator Taylor, the effective date.
Move and ask unanimous consent the vote on passage of the bill be considered the vote of the effective date clause.
Without objection, the roll call and final passage will be considered the roll call and effective date clause. Senator Kelly.
Reconsideration of House Bill 459 at this time.
Reconsideration of House Bill 459.
Senate CS for House Bill 459, Judiciary, an act relating to settlement and payment of claims for minimum wage and overtime compensation claims, and to liquidated damages and attorney fees for minimum wage and overtime compensation claims, and amending the Alaska Rule of Civil Procedure 82. Before the Senate reconsideration.
Senator Donnelly.
Can we have an at ease?
Senate will stand at ease. I'm going to extend the call to the second floor for 10 minutes. We're at ease. Okay. Will the Senate please come back to order? We have before us the reconsideration of Committee Substitute House Bill 459. Senate, please stand at ease. Will Senate please come back to order? We're under consideration of House Bill 459. Senator Donnelly.
Mr. President, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for the purposes of specific amendment number one.
Is there objection to return to second reading? Without objection, we're in second reading. Senator Donnelly?
I'd move amendment number one.
Amendment number one has been moved. Is there objection? There is objection. Senator Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the bill currently references federal and state law. The problem is federal law on the issue is not clear. There's no Supreme Court opinion on the subject, and the Ninth Circuit, which is the circuit that would control Alaska law, is kind of vague and a backdoor type standard, and it would get real confusing if I even started to explain what their standard was, which isn't a real standard. It's kind of a reverse thing, but there have been federal circuits that adopted a specific standard, and this is a specific standard that's been adopted by federal circuit, the Fifth Federal Circuit, and without some clarity in the bill, everybody's going to argue about what the correct standard is. And this is an appropriate standard. I've talked to attorneys on both sides of this, both yesterday and today. This is a standard that seems to be, people seem to think, is the standard that courts would go to. But if you don't say it, you're going to have an awful lot of fights out there over what it means and getting to this point eventually. So I think it's a real wise thing just to have a clear standard in the bill.
Is the objection to the amendment maintained? The objection is maintained. The question before the Senate is the adoption of amendment number one. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Senator Lincoln changes from nay to yay. Does any other member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so amendment number one to Senate Committee Substitute House Bill 459 Judiciary has been adopted by a vote of 11 yeas to 9 nays. The bill is back before us in third reading on final passage. Senator Adams.
I asked a question yesterday on this piece of legislation, and it was a simple question. Are we endorsing an activity that is prohibited under the Federal Labor Standards Act by the passage of this legislation? That is a question I'm asking.
Senator Adams?
I'll answer my own question. And the answer to that is yes, we are. And it's regarding the Federal Fair Labor Act and whether portions of the bill conflict with the law. Since yesterday I was able to find that answer and would like to briefly note for the body that language in U.S. Supreme Court decision that directly refers to these kind of agreements that are allowed in this bill, and note to the fact that they are expressly prohibited under federal law. The case that I'm referring to is the Brooklyn Savings Bank versus O'Neill that addresses exactly these types of agreement. The legislative history of the Fair Labor Act shows, and our state policy should be intended to protect certain groups from substandard wages and excessive hours, which endangers the national health and well-being and the free flowing of goods. The purpose of that federal act was to aid the unprotected, the unorganized, and the lowest paid of our workforces that we have. It is a very narrow group of employees that do not fall under the federal act, and it's basically the legislative employees, leaving virtually all other employers and employees subject to the federal law requirements. The question here revolves under section number 16 of the Fair Labor Act and how that has been interpreted in respect to overtime, minimum wages, and liquidated damages. The federal court have specifically held that employers and employees cannot come up with these agreements that eliminate liquidated damages. To quote directly from the case I mentioned, it states, the same policy consideration which forbids waiver of basic minimum and overtime wages under the Fair Labor Act also prohibit waiver of the employee's right to liquidated damages. In addition to the federal court saying no, our court system took a dim view of these kind of agreements, and that is why we are facing this legislation today. I don't think we should be passing this type of legislation. We voted it down on a 10-10 last night. We should do it again this morning, this afternoon.
Senator Donnelly?
We have another Eddies.
Senator will stand at ease. Senator, please come back to order. Senator Donnelly?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd move and ask unanimous consent we return to second reading for purposes of considering amendment number two.
Is there objection to return to second reading for consideration of amendment number two? There is objection. Senator Donnelly, you have the...
Okay. What amendment number two would do would just regarding section... I guess it's not actually section one, it's section two of the bill... would just maintain the present status quo. It would make law exactly the way it is now so that the bill wouldn't have a change in that section to the status quo. And I think that's my first choice of where we should be. The bill would still be a very positive bill for employers and I think also to some extent to employees in that it would still maintain the provisions in the third section, which would allow a good faith defense to employers from double damage, from the liquidated double damages provisions.
Senator Adams, are you seeking the floor still? The question before the Senate is the adoption. Oh, no. Have we returned? The question before the Senate is returned to second reading for specific amendment number 2. Senator Adams.
The question I asked regarding this happened to do with the attorney's fees yesterday, and that was happened to do with court rule number 82. How does this amendment go along with that? Because one of the things that we're going to have to do is vote on the court rule change. And I stated that if the court rule fails, then fees would be awarded according to a schedule versus a full fees and not being an attorney. I didn't know what was the honest fees for the paying public.
Senator Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. President. This amendment would solve that problem in that it would maintain the status quo and no longer require a court rule change.
Is there objection maintained to going to second reading? Without objection. Is the objection to return to second reading maintained? The question before the Senate is, shall Senate Committee Substitute House Bill 459 Judiciary be returned to second reading for purpose of specific amendment? Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? The bill is in second reading for the consideration of amendment number 2. By a vote of 14 yeas to 6 nays. Senator Donald.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd move amendment number 2.
Amendment number 2 has been moved. There is objection. Senator Donald.
Again, to explain, amendment number 2 would just keep us at the status quo regarding this section of law and no longer require a court rule change to be voted on.
Question before the Senate is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so amendment number 2 has failed to be adopted by a vote of 11 nays to 9 yeas. The bill is back before us in third reading on final passage. Is there further debate on final passage? If not, members may proceed to vote on final passage of Senate Committee Substitute House Bill 459, Judiciary Amended Senate. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so, Senate Committee Substitute House Bill 459, Judiciary Amended Senate, has failed to pass the Senate on reconsideration by a vote of 10 yeas to 10 nays. Madam Secretary, the next item on the calendar.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 25 by the Senate Rules Committee, suspending Uniform Rules 24C, 35, 41B, and 42E of the Alaska State Legislature concerning House Bill 249 relating to electrical and mechanical administrators.
Senator Taylor.
Resolution on the board. I don't think I even have
Is there debate?
Please be seated.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 25 by the Rules Committee suspending Uniform Rules 24C, 35, 41B, and 42E of the Alaska State Legislature concerning House Bill 249 relating to electrical and mechanical administrators.
If there's no debate, members may proceed to vote on SCR 25. Have all members voted? Senator Taylor? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so SCR 25 has passed the Senate by a vote of 20 yeas to 0 nays.
Sponsors, CS for sponsor substitute for House Bill 249 State Affairs amended by the House State Affairs Committee, reestablishing the Board of Electrical Examiners and extending the termination date of the Board of Mechanical Examiners relating to electrical and mechanical administration, providing for an effective date. Labor and Commerce recommends the Senate CS and do pass. Report was signed by Senator Kelly. Concurring Senator Sharp and Rieger, Senator Sell and Lincoln, no recommendation. Finance recommends the Labor and Commerce CS and do pass. Report was signed by Senator Frank. Concurring Senator Sharp, Kelly, Jocko, Rieger, and Petula. Senator Pierce signed, do not pass. It was referred to rules. It went back to the Rules Committee from the floor. The Rules Committee considered the bill and recommends the Senate CS calendar and do pass. Report was signed by Senator Helfer, Chair, concurring Senator Jocko. Senator Jarop signed, no recommendation. Senator Rieger signed, no recommendation. Calendar. There are several Senate CSs.
Senator Rieger.
Mr. President, I'd move that the Rules CS for House Bill 249 be adopted and considered in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Rules Committee substitute for House Bill 249 is adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Senate CS for sponsor substitute for House Bill 249 rules. I have no amendments.
Senator Taylor? Oh, yeah, you do have an amendment. Madam Secretary, would you read the amendment?
Amendment number one by Senator Taylor. I had it one time. Page 14, line one.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you. I'd move the amendment.
Amendment number one has been moved. Is there objection? Without objection, amendment number one has been adopted. Madam Secretary.
I have no further amendment.
Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent. Senate committee substitute, committee substitute. Sponsor substitute, House bill. Senate substitute, House Bill 249 rules, amended Senate, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, the bill is in third reading on final passage before us.
Senate CS for SS for HB 249 rules AMS, an act relating to electrical and mechanical administrators and providing for an effective date.
Is there debate? Question. All members may proceed to vote on passage of Senate committee substitute, Senate sponsor substitute, House Bill 249, rules amended Senate. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so Senate committee substitute, sponsor substitute, House Bill 249, rules amended Senate has passed the Senate by a vote of 19 yeas to 1 nay. Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent to vote on passage of the bill be considered the vote of the effective date clause.
Without objection, the roll call and final passage will be considered the roll call and the effective date clause. Madam Secretary.
CS for House Bill number 266, Labor and Commerce, by the House Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to guide outfitter and guide and master guide outfitter licenses, extending the termination date of the Big Game Commercial Services Board and providing for an effective date.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate Resources version be adopted for House Bill 266 in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 266, Labor and Commerce, is adopted.
Senate CS for House Bill 266, Resources, and I have no amendments.
Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent. Senate committee substitute, House Bill 266, Resources, be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, Senate committee substitute. Oh, Senator, excuse me. Senator Adams.
Maybe I'll remove my objection, but I need an answer to section number four of the bill. It's regarding liability insurance and for guide fitters, and leaves the requirement. It deletes the liability insurance for guide outfitters. However, it leaves the requirements for the marine mammal guide outfitters. And I just want a justification on why we're doing one and not the other in that particular section.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. And that's a good question from the senator from Kotzebue. Actually, we would have done it for both, but legal drafter said that we could not fit it under this particular title. And I think that's an issue that we need to look at next year.
I'll maintain my objection.
Senator Duncan. Senator Duncan.
Yeah, I was just curious if someone could give me an explanation of why we're moving why we're extending only to June 30th, 1994. I understand the impact of that. It means it begins this wind down year. But why do we continue to do this? Why don't we just give it another year or two and avoid the problems of coming back every year and extending? Seems to me that it makes more sense to maybe move it to 1995.
Senator Miller.
And that was another question that was brought up, and we have received in our office and a number of pieces of correspondence by people out there that are affected by this board, and I think at our last count on correspondence, it's running almost 50-50 on those that want the board to sunset and those that want the board to continue. So we thought if we just run it another year, we'd be back next year to take a look at some of the concerns that are out there.
The question before the Senate is the advancement motion. Okay. Question is, shall Senate Committee Substitute House Bill 266 resources be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and place in final passage? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so Senate Committee Substitute House Bill 266 resources has failed to advance from second to third reading by a vote of 11 yeas to 9 nays. Madam Secretary, the next item on the calendar. Senator Duncan, were you seeking the Senate will stand at ease. You don't need a conference committee. Will the Senate please come back to order? Madam Secretary, would you please read the next item on the calendar?
House Bill number 372 by the House Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee relating to the Ford Dam Pool Transfer Fund. Finance reports it back as follows. Senators Pierce and Frank, co-chair, signed no recommendation. Senator Rieger signed do not pass, except as part of a broader cleanup measure. Senator Cotullo signed do not pass. Senator Kelly signed do pass. Rules recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Halford, concurring Senators Jacko and Rieger. I have no amendments.
Senator Taylor.
Unanimous consent, Senate Committee Substitute House, move the House Bill 372 be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, placed on final passage.
There is objection. Question is the advance in the House. Oh, Senator Duncan.
Maybe the change, we can see it's obvious, the first section, section 1, subparagraph B. Could someone explain, it says, unless otherwise provided an appropriation, and that replaces subject to appropriation. It seems to me to be the same language, but different. I mean the same intent, right? Department shall transfer the balance of the fund. What are we trying to do here? Are we limiting the legislature's ability to appropriate the money the way we want to appropriate? Or what's the intent here?
Senator Taylor?
The intent is the same as last year when this legislation passed. This legislation that did pass last year was defective to the extent that it failed to provide for appropriation, and that appropriation then we had to go through the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee to get authorization to accomplish the intent of the language that was passed. In fact, the bill passed last year does not work without the language that we're talking about here. What the second provision that you were specifically referring to actually accomplishes is not the initial appropriation. The initial appropriation every year has to come from the legislature. All this does is breaks out that appropriation so that 40% goes to PCE, 40% goes into the Ford Dam Pool account,
and 20% goes to statewide project accounts, three different accounts. It does not provide for the initial appropriation, which is always something that lays within the hands of the legislature to appropriate.
Question before the Senate is the advancement of House Bill 372. Is the objection maintained? The objection is maintained. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so House Bill 372 fails to advance by a vote of 11 yeas to 9 nays. Madam Secretary.
CS for House Bill Number 409, Finance and MEFD failed by the House Finance Committee and aggravated the maximum amount of assistance that may be granted under the Adult Public Assistance Program and the Program of Aid to Families with Dependent Children, proposing a special demonstration project within the Program of Aid to Families with Dependent Children and directing the Department of Health and Social Services to seek waivers from the federal government to implement the project. Hess recommends the Senate CS reports it back as follows. Senator Rieger, Chair, and Senators Miller and Miller signed no recommendation. Senator Duncan signed do not pass. Senator Lehman signed needs AFDC payment amendment. Senator Sharp signed do pass. Finance recommends a finance CS and reports the Senate CS and reports it back as follows. Senator Frank, co-chair, and Senator Sharp and Jacko signed do pass. Senator Pierce, Rieger, and Kelly no recommendation. Cotulla signed do not pass. Was referred back to finance and finance came out with another Senate CS. And excuse me, the first CS was never reported out. The finance came out with a Senate CS. Report was signed by Senators Frank and Pierce, co-chairs concurring, Senators Kelly, Sharp, and Jacko. Senator Rieger signed no recommendation. Rules recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Halford, concurring, Senators Rieger and Jacko. There is a Hess and a Finance Senate CS.
Senator Frank.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate Finance Committee version be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Senator Frank.
What we did when we took the bill back to finance for the second time is we basically, with one exception, went pretty much back to the House version. We took the ratable reduction in the second finance version at 1.7, as the House did, and the one thing that we did, we also took the House's language as far as contracting out the some of the employment-type works programs, and also, but the one change we did make from the House of Substance was to have it start the ratable starts in October 94 as opposed to January 95. I think others could speak to changes that were made in previous committees.
Is it Senator Ellis?
Yes, Mr. President, I do maintain my objection. I wanted to pose a few questions here while we're in second reading. I wanted to ask the member of the Finance Committee, what was the rationale for increasing the hours for participation in the work fair demonstration projects? I understand those number of hours required in exchange for welfare payments was increased, and I just wonder what was the underlying rationale for that? That's my first question. The second is, what is the age of the youngest child of a public assistance recipient for mandatory participation in workfare? I just wonder if there's an age that the youngest child of that woman, if the child has to be a certain age before she's required to leave the child and go work off her public assistance payments. Third question is, can somebody remind us of the level of cuts that were made last year in adult public assistance and AFDC, because we're piling another cut on top this year, and I want the body to be reminded of the exact dollar figure. And if I had that, Mr. President, I'd share it. I do not have that with me today. But folks, I'm sure when the Finance Committee made this decision to change from the Hess version to the finance version, that they calculated what we had cut last year and what was being proposed to be cut this year in monthly payments and added those together, and at least some people made the came to the conclusion that that was sustainable by these poor families. There are 24,000 Alaskan children living in poverty today. And then I also wanted to ask if there was information given from the Division of Public Assistance before the Finance Committee, as was given in the HESC Committee, that language about contracting out, that the department would not, or the department believes that that this is an area where there is lots of proof that contracting out for this service is actually more expensive because of lack of providers or service delivery costs here in Alaska. I don't understand all the reasons, but the testimony in the HESC committee was that contracting out made no sense. The department would not do it. It was gratuitous language to be here, and I wonder if that testimony, if the Finance Committee took the time to take that testimony and decided to storm ahead anyway in spite of the testimony that we heard in the HESC committee and that was in the public record. That's enough for starters, Mr. President.
Senator Lehman.
Mr. President, I will respond to some of the questions. The first one on why were the hours increased from the House version to the Senate to this version, the increase was to make it consistent with the bill that I had introduced. But more importantly than just making it consistent with that bill is that workfare works better when you have more hours. The Manpower Demonstration Research Corporation has done studies on workfare and has shown that they are indeed, they indeed work, but they work best when people will work on meaningful projects and will spend more time at working on them. The second question, I don't remember what the question is, but the answer is six. I think it has to do with the age of a child. I don't. So anyway, the member will remember his question. The answer is 6 years old. The third question had to do with last year's reductions. I don't have those in my fingertips, but I note for the members that in this case, AFDC reductions will be on average $13 and APA $5, and that's out of an average monthly payouts of about $923 for AFDC and I think $319 for APA, somewhere in that neighborhood. Alaska will still rank number one in payments for these, for AFDC, well over $200 above the next highest level, including several other states whose costs of living are arguably as high, nearly as high, or perhaps higher than the state of Alaska. And regarding the question about contracting out, I believe that was an amendment that was added on in the House, and I don't know if the Senate Finance Committee dealt with it, how it dealt with it exactly, but I think the thought is that contracting out can and should be done just as efficiently as the department. I'm of that opinion. I think the department probably is not. It doesn't surprise me that they would form that opinion. But I believe that we can come to the conclusion that there are people in the state of Alaska who can handle dealing with workfare just as efficiently as the department can, and I don't have a problem with that provision being in the bill.
Senator Ellis.
Mr. President, I'm going to request an at ease so the folks carrying this bill can go ask Jan Hansen. The amount that was cut last year from APA and AFDC, if they don't care to, I will, and present that information to the body. So we'll know the cumulative impact on folks who depend on public assistance.
Senator Frank?
2.8% last year on top of 1.8, or before 1.7 this year.
Is there further debate? Senator Ellis?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to argue in favor of rejecting the Senate Finance version of this bill and urge my colleagues to support the HESC committee chairman in the Senate and the version that he put out from his committee. In the Senate Hess Committee version, these reductions, second year in a row reductions, were eliminated. And I'll remind the body of legislation that passed out of here that included language referred to as proration. This body, or a majority of this body, made the decision to send along in the legislative process language that gives the administration the authority, for the first time as far as I know, the authority to reduce every longevity bonus check, every adult public assistance check, every AFDC public assistance check, in case there are increases in those caseloads, to avoid the department coming back and saying more senior citizens showed up or applied for the, eligible folks applied for the longevity bonus. We didn't have enough money budgeted by this legislature. Some might argue that those things were purposefully underfunded, but the department won't be coming back for a supplemental in the future. They will just, the executive branch, through the authority given in that legislation, cut longevity bonus checks to every individual. Now, some of you don't care all that much about public assistance recipients, but I venture a guess that if there are more senior citizens and there's not adequate funding of the longevity bonus program and the administration has the authority to proration authority, I don't know if you know what you're messing with when you give or maybe you do know what you're messing with when you give the executive branch the authority to cut everybody's checks. There will be no warning. It'll be a devastating thing, and I just talk about this, Mr. President, because we're talking about senior citizens, longevity bonus checks, we're talking about senior citizens on adult public assistance, and we're talking about poor people on AFDC. The aged, the blind, and the disabled.
Point of order. Senator, are we talking about adopting the finance version of this bill or another bill that we have already passed?
Senator Sharp, your point is well taken. Would you try to come back?
Mr.
To this
President, I think there's a direct connection between the actions this body has already taken that impact on this legislation. I'm arguing that it is not necessary to adopt the Finance Committee version that includes these cuts because this body has already given the authority to the executive branch to make these cuts. So I think there is a direct connection. It's very closely related, and I don't believe that I'm out of order. So I continue to support the actions of the Senate Hess Committee Chairman in his version of the bill that got rid of these cuts, moved these demonstration projects, the workfare demonstration projects, forward. Actually, let me clarify that and say that it's a preferable version of the bill without these second year in a row cuts. I do find it extremely distasteful in both versions of the bill that are before us now for adoption of one of them that we're asking senior citizens in the House Finance version, those who are aged, blind, and disabled, we're asking them to help pay for these demonstration projects for AFDC recipients, demonstration projects for which they are not eligible. And I guess we can discuss that further under third reading, but both of these versions are distasteful to me. The Finance Committee version is the most distasteful. I would urge members to vote no on the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute so that we can go back to the Hess Committee, which, while not great, is preferable in its provisions.
Question before the Senate is the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute. Senator Lehman.
Mr. President, I guess I could have anticipated that the member who spoke probably would have raised those objections, but I want the legislators here to focus on what is really being done. Instead of looking at a $13 and a $5 reduction, let's look at the benefit. Even our president has come out in support of a program to end welfare as we know it. Welfare recipients and those not on welfare all agree that they don't want to be there. And so what this is a very positive, compassionate way to develop a program to reduce that dependence. And I hold that the Finance Committee substitute, which I support, actually helps do that. Let's look at what it does. Number one, it increases the auto allowance. So those on now can have an automobile or more than one. Instead of adding up now to $2,500, it would be to $5,000. The earned income disregard is increased, so people will be able to keep more money that they earn. And I would hope that people who are on this demonstration project will be able to keep far more than the $13 reduction. And that's what we want to do, to help them regain independence. And the 100-hour rule would be waived under the demonstration project, and workfare will help help establish, you know, as this the reports have shown, a method for people working, and that will help encourage people to get off workfare. So instead of focusing as, you know, I know one writer in the Anchorage Daily News has done on, you know, laying this on the backs of poor people, this will do just the opposite. This is done to help them. And that's exactly what we want to do. It's a very compassionate approach. I think it makes sense. And I think that we should have done it a long time ago.
Senator Ellis.
Mr. President, every positive thing that the senator from Bootleggers Cove mentioned, every positive thing in his mind is contained in the senator from the Hillside's bill, the Hess committee version. It's all in there. The only thing that's not in there is what he mentioned, is the cut that we shouldn't be focusing on. So I appreciate you making my argument. You know, the Hess committee version is preferable.
Question before the Senate is the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so the Finance Committee substitute has been adopted by a vote of 11 yeas, 9 nays. Secretary.